This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Prop B passed Bexar County voters with 52% of the vote. Some see that as a narrow margin of victory, but a victory nonetheless. So what is next for the city of San Antonio on striking a deal with the San Antonio Spurs for a downtown arena? Also, what did we learn from a recent report to the city council about the June fatal Bidle Creek flood? And many of our neighbors are going hungry right now with the disruption of SNAP and the lack of payment for government workers. We're joined now by San Antonio Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones to give us an update on these issues. You can call in, ask her questions, and give comments. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And Mayor Jones, thank you so much for coming back to the TPR studios.
Yeah, always good to be here.
So 52% of the vote. What do you make of that?
Well, look, I think it's important that we, moving forward, acknowledge those that support it, and clearly a large folks have also that want to see more, want to see more due diligence, certainly want to see more public input. I think it's important that we look at how we can make sure the project agreements that still need to be finalized, everything from relocation agreement to community benefits agreement, all those are reflective of, frankly, what our community deserves for such a generational investment. I think as importantly, though, and I've shared this with my colleagues, is that we need to be thinking about not just the deal, but, hey, the plan. Right. Mm-hmm. What's the plan for a revitalized downtown? And in my mind, I think we have to incorporate, development around the baseball stadium to include Hemisphere area, to include, what does it look like on the east side? I think now is our time to be strategic and deliberate about those things because, you know, there can't be three different plans. We've got one revitalized downtown that we can achieve if we're strategic about it.
So did anything change after the Prop B passed? Were things on hold at City Hall and saying, okay, move forward?
Yeah, one of the things that we will now work to accomplish is the independent study that I've called for. So we are, frankly, gathering input from the rest of the council members to make sure that that analysis is reflective of all of the concerns. Because, again, it's not just the arena. I think there's questions, rightfully so, also about how do we lay our chips, if you will, from the PFC across each of these things. So I think that'll be important. I think we also want to make sure that we're, being thoughtful about the things that we ask for. Certainly affordable housing, certainly, again, a very strong community benefits agreement. And of course, you've heard me say, like a broken record, revenue sharing. It's not a foreign concept. Other communities have this. And I always ask, why can't San Antonio have nice things? We got to ask, though, and we certainly will.
So the revenue sharing, would that be like part of concessions, part of the door? Like, which revenue do you want?
I'm open to all of that, as I've shared, right? The naming rights is one that is very popular in other communities. I think I shared and I mentioned in the op-ed that I wrote for the San Antonio Express News. It was the naming rights between the Miami Heat and Miami-Dade County, where it was a 17-year deal, $117 million, and only $2 million of that each year went to the team. The rest of that went into the general fund. So look, this is not a foreign concept. It's not magic. We just have to ask for it.
The Spurs spent a lot of money, $7 million, maybe even probably more.
I think more.
Yeah, that's a safe assumption because we'll get more numbers later.
Yeah.
And against Cops Metro, which had a lot less money.
More nuns, but less money. You're correct.
And so a lot of trust with Cops Metro and when people went to go vote. Mm. What do you make of that? What lessons do you or should be learned from people? Cops Metro didn't win in their attempt to try to keep Prop B from passing, but yet a lot of people look to them for guidance. And are we going to keep Cops Metro? Will they be part of the conversation still moving forward?
Look, I think when we are thinking about this generational investment, we need to incorporate as much of our community as possible, certainly geographically, but also organizations like Cops Metro that, as you describe, have the trust of the community. I think it was not only the trust, I think it was also the points that they were raising, which were fair points, many of the points that I myself raised in terms of cost and making sure that we've got as good of a deal as possible. But again, look, we are going to negotiate very hard, as I said I would, and make sure that we've got a good deal for the city.
Let's go to a caller. We have Rudy on the phone. And Rudy, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, Mayor. I just did have one question. I was very big no on Prop A and B, but since it looks like Project Marvel is going to happen now, I wonder, is there any plans to expand public transit in and around the downtown area specifically with this Project Marvel in place? Because I'm not a big fan of the project myself, but if we can at least get expanded public transit, that would be awesome.
All right, Rudy, thank you for the call. First, I want to talk about this first assumption, the passage of Prop B. Does that guarantee that Project Marvel is going to happen?
Well, look, I think there's a couple of things that we need to be cognizant of. One, there's the economic environment. Right. There's that piece of it. I think the independent economic analysis that I've called for will help us understand where the best ROI is on some of these investments. For example, the PFC and what that means for the convention center and for the Alamo Dome. I think big picture, though. Right. Again, I'm focused on a revitalized downtown, and a revitalized downtown means we've got one, affordable housing. As the caller just described, we absolutely need public transit. Any vibrant downtown in this country always has more residents downtown than tourists. So I think we have the opportunity to apply the lessons learned from communities like Austin and other places when we think about what a vibrant downtown for San Antonio residents looks like. And of course, public transit has to be part of that.
All right. And so, so it's a yes for Rudy's question.
Public transit, of course. Yeah.
It has to be part of it.
It must.
And there's lots of ways to talk about public transit, you know, the park and ride, other issues could be part of making if Project Marvel. I mean, it's still not a sure thing, right? We have to think about it as like there's so many other critical points that have to be worked out before we can actually say Project Marvel is going to happen, right?
Well, I think, I mean, as you point out, there's the project agreements. We all have to agree on those things. We all have to make sure that we're comfortable with the CBA and ultimately, again, what this means for our downtown. I, again, I think really want to make sure that we're being thoughtful and thinking about the connection across these projects, which is why I go from baseball stadium, which, oh, by the way, their term sheet is also non-binding. So we look at that. We look at what's happening around the proposed arena. And then we also look, of course, at making sure that we're best supporting the east side.
So City Council received a report this week about the horrible June flood at Bidle Creek. Mm-hmm. What did you learn from that?
Well, the Kleinfelder report, as you described, I'm thankful. Well, first, let me extend my continued thoughts to the family and friends of the 13 members of our community that we lost in June to the flooding. And because the city staff did a good job of calling for an independent study so quickly after, we were able to gather the data to ensure that we have as good of an understanding of what happened that day. In my mind, the two most important questions were, because those are the questions I get when people ask me about this, which is, you know, was any of that unfortunate loss of life or damage, was that caused by unfinished flood-related projects in our community? And the answer is no. Two, did any of the, you know, TxDOT-related construction contribute to that? And the answer is that was not a significant contributing factor. Again, the sheer amount of rain that fell in such a short amount of time was by and large the issue there that caused the most damage and unfortunately the loss of life. So we have several recommendations and the city staff is already working to implement many of those. I've asked that the city council receive a quarterly update on the implementation of those. I think that's important. I've also asked, though, that we have a more holistic look at how we are going to identify and then prioritize flood-related projects in our community. That the Bidle Creek damage, what we funded in the FY26 budget was literally just funding repairs done as a result of that damage. But if we did those repairs and we had that same level of flooding again, we would have that same level of damage. So I want us to have a more holistic approach in terms of how we identify big projects like those 14 projects that are on the state's flood mitigation plan as currently scoped. Those 14 projects are $411 million, right? We know there are many other projects that are also closer to design completion that we'd want to consider. We also can look at public safety data. I mean, firefighters will tell you right away, hey, if it's going to rain a little bit, we know we're going to have to go to X, Y, and Z. Right. On top of, you know, what our neighbors will very quickly also identify as, hey, when it rains a little bit, this whole street will be flooded. right? It's going to be hard for us to get in and out of our driveway. You'll see the rain almost near the door. So it's those kinds of across the board projects that we want to identify, we want to prioritize. And then as we get closer to the bond, we'll have an idea of what we'll be able to fund. But I think a logical approach that we can explain to folks in terms of how we're going to identify and then fund these, whether it be the bond, whether it be through the storm fee, I think is what our community deserves. And that's what we're going to provide.
I got about a minute here before we go to break, but it can't. But there are ways to prevent a repeat of the Bidal flood. I mean, if that same amount of rain fell, could we? I mean, those people were just driving to work and they got.
Well, so some of those recommendations have to do with, processes and technologies in place that can ensure that certain areas are closed off. And, again, putting some of those recommendations in place is important. There are more expensive options, but I think the most immediate in terms of public safety is a better awareness of when certain roads need to be closed off.
And keeping people out of harm's way.
Yeah. But again, I think what's critical is that none of the models that we had would have predicted that. I think that's a really key part of this conversation is based on the information the city staff and public safety acted in accordance with the information that we had up until that day.
All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, I want to hear about your efforts to deal with the hunger crisis that is just getting worse and worse here in San Antonio. And our phone lines are open. The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this one-minute break.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Need to get rid of your property? Here's a simple solution. Donate it to TPR. Visit tpr.careasy.org/realestatedonation to learn more.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With us in the studio today, Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones. And we're going to talk about what's happening with SNAP here in San Antonio. You can call in with questions and comments about any topic, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So we just heard in the first half hour, we're joined by Congressman Castro. Mm-hmm. There may be a deal working through Washington, D.C. to get the government refunded, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be quick. Mm-hmm. And so people got to eat. They got to eat every day. Mm-hmm. We've had so many people, their SNAP cards mm-hmm. are not being recharged, mm-hmm. people working for the government not being paid, a lot of problems. But I know that you have been working to try to get people fed. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, this is it is shameful that one, we should not have. We are now living through the longest federal government shutdown in our country's history, which is ridiculous. But to give people an idea of just how dependent our community is on SNAP benefits, every month in our community, $50 million worth of SNAP benefits comes to ensure that the most vulnerable in our community can put food on the table. And so when I heard that the federal government was not going to ensure that those funds were provided, which is unprecedented, even in previous shutdowns, they have worked to make sure that that is the case. I talked to my folks and said, hey, what can we do? And so started literally calling around businesses to raise money. And USAA very generously, hey, I called Juan, can I count on you for $250K? The answer was yes. Kim Rapier Foundation, very generous, gave $100K. Frost Bank gave $100K. And so down the line. So raised $1.6 million in about 72 hours. And I'm thankful that the city staff, in particular Metro Health and Human Services, have worked hard to get those gift cards out. And every individual is getting $150 worth of HEB gift cards. So it's a good start. It's obviously not meant to be the solution. The solution is federal government gets back up to work. And I took the time myself to talk to some folks and meet some folks that were on the receiving end of these. And I went to the senior center in District 5 on South Fresa. And that morning, I was just talking to them a little bit, and I was I got a little bit choked up/pissed off because two of the folks I gave cards to were veterans. right, as we are on, as we tomorrow approaching Veterans Day. So it is, when we think about, again, the most vulnerable in our community, but let's never forget that among those folks are those that have raised the right hand to support and defend the Constitution. So we really need folks to get back to work, federal government back up to work. So from our veterans to, you know, those working very hard at the airport to keep us safe, we can make sure that those folks are also can put food on the table. Let's also not forget, though, I think Goldman Sachs put out their report recently that even if the government were to come back up, you've already seen a contraction in the fourth quarter economy by about 1%, which is, again, shameful. That's what gets me, is like all of this nonsense is truly unnecessary. Unnecessary government shutdown, unnecessary suffering in our community. And, you know, this is why I have asked that we plan as much as we can to reduce the uncertainty in our community. One of the things I'm also, as you heard me say, very concerned about is the implementation of the One Big Beautiful Bill, right? Cuts to Medicare, Medicaid, CHIP, SNAP. And I think we're unfortunately beginning to see kind of what that is going to look like in implementation when that takes effect next year.
So these gift cards that you raised money for and you're providing, they're going towards seniors, right?
So it's largely seniors, but it's also those that are with the WIC program who also qualify for SNAP benefits, so women, infant, and children. So what I would encourage folks, we wanted to utilize the city's infrastructure. So if you get SNAP benefits and those have been frozen, reach out to the city and see if that's something that that we may be able to provide to you and get to a place where you can pick those up.
And the San Antonio Food Bank is just doing incredible work. It's impossible for them to meet the need 100%, but I mean, they're maxing out everything that they have.
Yeah, I'm thankful for Eric and his team and the good work that they do. But yes, look, he told me very clearly, he's like, we need time, we need advocacy, and we need resources. And so he's like, time, if folks have time to come volunteer, right, to your point, they're seeing an increased demand. So that means you've got increased workload to put, you know, food in people's trunks and get things to where they need to be. If you've got a little bit of money in your pocket and would like to help your neighbor, please also contribute to the food bank. And advocacy, of course. You know, there's nothing like, I'm sure this is not an issue for Congressman Castro, but for others, you know, make sure that your elected representative knows where you are on this issue and knows how frustrated you are with this waste of time that is needlessly falling on the shoulders of the most vulnerable.
Let's go to another caller, Jeannie. And Jeannie, you're on the air. And Jeannie, you there?
Yes, thank you. My question is regarding the revitalization of downtown, the downtown projects, regarding infrastructure and parking for those. I'm just wondering what plans have been made for that, how many additional homes will have to be bought out in those areas, and just really, who's going to be paying for that?
All right. Thank you for the call, Jeannie. And so, Mayor?
Yeah. I mean, these are some of the questions that we are still working to ensure we've got good answers for. I think there were some initial ideas about how some of those things would be done. But I think, again, if we took a more holistic approach to a revitalized downtown, from baseball stadium to proposed arena to east side, that looks a little bit different than the narrower approach that has been taken up until now. So, you know, hear you loud and clear on terms of, you know, who's going to pay, how it's going to affect surrounding neighborhoods. To ensure that, you know, we've got a livable and affordable downtown for everybody.
And let's go to Virginia. And Virginia, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, this is a little bit off topic, but I wanted to ask Mayor Ortiz Jones whether she plans to attend the annual Planned Parenthood luncheon next year. We missed seeing you there on November 6th, and I believe it's a cause that you support, and I think it's very important to provide your presence and your physical support for this cause, and it's something that Ron Nirenberg and his wife did attend every year.
All right, thank you for the call, Virginia.
Yeah. Well, Virginia, you know, the only reason I could not attend that luncheon is because we had a session, and we had several, we were interviewing our candidates for those that would serve on the VIA board. So actually, to the previous question about how do we think about the importance of public transit in our revitalization, there are a few things, to be honest, that would have kept me away from that luncheon. But what I did that A session, if you recall, if you saw the video, is we were recognizing some of those folks that work in maternal health at, I believe it was United Healthcare. And I, one, obviously thank them for their service, but also am very cognizant of the ways in which reproductive health care, access to it, is not only a public health issue, it's certainly a public safety issue, as frankly folks are having to determine whether somebody is, quote, close enough to dying in order to provide them life-saving health care. And two, it's also an economic issue, right? As corporations are looking to where they may want to relocate, certainly ensuring that there's sufficient OBGYNs in our community is important. I understand Kelly Robinson, the president of Human Rights Campaign, was your speaker, and I think that's apropos given the strong intersections between reproductive health care, but also my LGBTQ community. So I think it is important we address these things from an intersectional standpoint. And I will, of course, continue to be a strong advocate for reproductive rights.
Last week, we had Robert Puente on the air, the CEO president of SAWS, talking about the water chiller downtown and the possibility of moving it. He said the estimated cost, $200 million, was not a number that he thought was anything anyone should rely on. He said that number is basically something they made up. And they're not even sure that what's going to happen. They're going to be making decisions about moving that chiller way down the line when things firm up with Project Marvel. So do you have any thoughts about like what to do about this chiller, and why don't we have a more well thought out plan here?
So yeah, that 200 million number was shared. I remember asking that at a B session, right? Just reminding my folks of the cause, because so the previous administration, they had a municipal utilities committee. I think the fact that our city owns both SAWS and CPS is a strategic advantage for the city, and I wanted my council to be much more conversant in that. So we have now gone to alternating meetings each month between SAWS and with CPS. And so when SAWS came to brief us, they were going through some of their proposed investments, they were talking. The question came. I think I raised the question, in fact, about the SAWS water, the chilled water plant, and how much that would cost. And it was the SAWS general counsel that stated, nothing south of $200 million. So that's where that number came from. I understand there is, a feasibility study though that is going to better inform what that number and what that approach may be to ensure that those that are utilizing, those water resources are the ones, in fact, paying for it.
Well, SAWS is expected to come to City Council next year asking for a rate increase. They're saying that the water chiller
was
not part of that.
That's right.
Of course, but it pays for itself because they charge these outlets to use that chilled water. But still, if they're able to generate $200 million or whatever to pay for moving the water plant, if they don't move it, isn't that revenue that could be put against raising the rates?
Well, look, I think this is part of the overall discussion about what a revitalized downtown is going to need to entail, both from an energy standpoint and also from a water standpoint. So I think when we get the findings of the feasibility study to ensure that we don't need to hypothesize, we can look at what the data shows us to determine what makes the most sense.
All right. And so Robert Puente said he has not heard from you that you would like to increase the SAWS transfer to the general fund.
I have not said that. No. And actually, it was the same meeting. Look, let's be very clear, y'all.
I got about 30 seconds.
Okay. The city has a $150 million budget gap in FY27. The city manager has a plan to close that. But as you all know, a lot can happen in 12 months. And if that budget ain't final, that gap ain't closed. So I wanted to lay out for my council all the options that we have. And of course, one of those is, in fact, increasing the transfer from 4% to 5% to the city council.
All right. Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones, thank you for coming in here and giving us that update. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio.
The This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansget it.